This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. Great to be back here at the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And Ryan, who do we have today?
We have an interview with Ms. Jenny Baranek. Jenny is an English professor. She teaches at the Irvine campus of the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. And she also wrote a very interesting article in the January 2012 issue of the Toastmaster magazine about communication resolutions. Welcome, Jenny Baranek.
Welcome, Jenny.
Well, Jenny, we're excited to talk with you today. Your article's a little bit different than the average article, I guess you could say, if we can say that there are average articles in the Toastmaster magazine. As we're often in Toastmasters focusing on verbal communication skills, your article is challenging us to take the year of 2012 and work on fine-tuning our writing skills. Could you share with us, why do you think that's an important endeavor for Toastmasters or for anyone else for that matter?
I feel that Toastmasters, from what I learned from the editors of the magazine, is all about all types of communication. And I feel that communicating through the written word in a professional way is important for anybody.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that was in this article, Jenny, could certainly be transferred to the spoken word as well. I didn't see anything here that's specifically for writing. Did you, Ryan?
Well, of course, her suggestion is about writing, but I think, and Jenny, maybe you have a different opinion, but in a sense, it's a little bit easier with the written word in the sense that once you've spoken, it's done and it's out. Whereas with the written word, you could put it down on paper, then go back and clean it up and make sure it's sharp.
I think the spoken word is a little bit more, people are more forgiving with it because you can't give it to someone to proofread, or you can't take some time away from it, go back and look at it. With the written word, you definitely have that opportunity.
Right, and that's definitely great for Ryan and me.
<That's> and right. I have someone proofread all of my work.
Of course. Now, Jenny, I'm an English major myself, so your article was of, I'll say, special interest to me. One of the themes of your article is about making your writing concise, avoiding excessive wordiness and such.
Yes.
Could you maybe give us a couple, or give our listeners a couple of examples of what you mean by that?
From my experience with my students, it seems in high school that they're almost promoting you to be wordy. So students come into college thinking, well, if I get the word count, that's all that matters. And then in college, it's all about getting your point across as effectively as possible. So a common one, and I don't know if this is what you're getting at, but a common sentence I would get would be, the reason why I'm doing this is because. And there's like at least you could take out the reason, you could take out why and because, and the reason is.
Right.
Or the fun ones, you know, are a free gift or circle around, you know, two words that mean the same thing, that you can definitely cut one.
Right. Yeah. This one book that I bought a few years ago, it was called Paul Brain's Common Errors in English Usage. I don't know if you're familiar with that one. They have a website too, that's constantly updated. I have to tell you, it's one of the most fascinating books that I've ever purchased. It doesn't read like a novel, of course. It's more of a reference guide, but some of the ideas in there and some of the words that you just take for granted. And it means so much to me because I am often victim of these faux pas myself many, many times. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you for that correction.
No, it's just that there's so many strong words out there that you could use. And I can't think of an example right off the top of my head, but one word could probably take care of maybe five words that we use. And, you know, it's, there's just wonderful words in the language that sometimes we don't take advantage of.
Yeah, since we're on this topic right now of we mentioned redundancy before, the redundant mm-hmm. words circle around, free gift. I did pick out a handful that are my favorites that I like to read and go through just for the fun of it, because I, once again, people use these all the time. Mm-hmm. And you just don't think about it. You just, it's like, well, that's what that person said, so I'm saying it as well, but you don't realize what it means. Complete opposite, you know, mm-hmm. could there be any other? This one is my favorite, ATM machine. And people who say, what's wrong with that? It's an ATM machine. What else is it? Well, ATM stands for automated teller machine. So you're saying automated teller machine, machine. Same thing with, this is something I never realized, HIV virus. Well, the V stands for virus. Mm. Your PIN number, the N stands for number, folks. armed gunman, IRA account, advanced notice. It's like, what other kind of notice is there? Uh-huh. Revert back, past history, final outcome. Cash money. That's one that I've recently heard more in movies. You're like, hey, give me some cash money. I'd never really heard that before, and I just started hearing it. I said, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But end result, all together. And this is definitely top of my list that makes me cringe when I hear this, close proximity.
Yeah, and now that I'm aware of it, I have my tongue a lot too, or else.
Close proximity. Absolutely certain. Mm-hmm. And I think that those two words in itself open it up for a much bigger question. Absolutely certain. When you're talking about something that's like certainty, mm-hmm. there's no need for absolutely. And there are many words that fit in that category as well. So if you just kind of know the rule for that there cannot be degrees of certainty, because that's implicit in the word itself.
Right. It's like absolutely taking away from certainty's identity by doing that, you know.
You just got a contradiction there. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think it's sort of like you're trying to really emphasize the certainty, but you're actually sapping power from what you're saying.
Right.
And it can come across sometimes, too, as though sort of you're just trumping up.
Right.
You know what I mean? Trumping up the... what you're trying to say, so that maybe you're not quite as certain as you're trying to lead everyone to believe you are.
No. Hey, listen, dude, I am absolutely certain.
Right.
It's like, I don't think you are.
Right.
Couple of words, I think, well, I just said it, but when you use I think and I believe that you should think about when you're using those and whether or not they're taking away from your argument, and you should just back up your opinion with facts, or whether it's important to make it clear that it's your opinion.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
It does. I'm glad you brought that up, Jenny, because I actually was going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. I remember in college, actually, it was my freshman year of college, mm-hmm. my required writing or English course, whatever it was. It wasn't part of my major.
Right.
The professor really hammering into us to avoid saying I believe or I think or in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And her argument was, if you're writing it, we know that it's your opinion,
exactly.
So you don't have to say it. However, as I was thinking about this before our discussion today, mm-hmm. I wondered if sometimes there's maybe... it serves the purpose of tact or
right.
softening the message a little bit so it doesn't come across, you know,
it's controversial.
Believe. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I find myself saying a lot in class with my students because I want them to know that it's my opinion as their teacher, but there are other ways to think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there certainly are points where you need to stress that it's your opinion. For example, I take part on some debate boards, mm-hmm. and really from the beginning in my bio, in my introduction on the site, I make it clear that anything I say here is my opinion unless otherwise stated, like unless I state a fact or state a source that's somebody else's opinion, just
right.
because everything I said, every sentence would start with, I believe, it's my opinion that, and mm-hmm. it's just very redundant and unnecessary.
Yeah. Mm.
Jenny, I'm reminded of another lesson that was drilled into me, and this one I've found useful throughout the years, and that is avoiding passive voice in favor of active voice.
Yeah.
Specifically around the verb to be.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think that's situational as well. I think once you understand the difference between active and passive voice, and you can choose, because sometimes the style of the writing, or even drawing from the sentence before, sometimes I think that passive voice works, like for transitions, like if you're trying mm-hmm. to stress the object rather than the subject. I agree that if you don't know and you're always writing in passive voice, it can make your writing less strong.
I think that's a great point, because that's really how I approach it. Well, that's not why I think it's a great point, but I certainly cannot say I completely avoid passive voice. I don't. Mm-hmm. It's something rather that I'm conscious of, that when I am writing, I will look to and make sure I've got a decent balance. But just to give our listeners a couple of examples, if you're not familiar with the differences between the two, and Jenny might want to add a couple more. Passive voice would be, I am feeling happy today. Mm-hmm. And there's the verb to be there, I am, which is a weak verb, versus I feel happy today. And mm-hmm. feel is a more action-oriented, stronger verb. Another example would be, I am able to do it, as opposed to I can do it. And of course, in both of those examples, we're also reducing the number of words, so it's a little tighter, more concise.
Right.
What is your opinion on ending sentences with prepositions?
Apparently, it is okay to end a sentence with a preposition. I mean, there's a couple of examples that are the common ones. I can't think of them right now where it would obviously be ridiculous not to end it with a...
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if there is any rule, or it seems like this landscape is constantly shifting mm-hmm. as to what the rule exactly is.
But all of those rules, like you're not allowed to split an infinitive, or you shouldn't end a sentence with a preposition, there's always exceptions to all of them. That's what you learn when you start to study the language, is you just need to be aware of it, because we have a tendency to do these things too much.
Right.
And then people tend to react and say, don't do that at all. So there's confusion. Like my students will say, I learned that I couldn't start a sentence with the word because. And it's like, you can, but that's going to be part of an introductory phrase, and it's going to be, precede a complete sentence. However, most of the times when students use because, they write a fragment, so their teachers say, just don't do it.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. In dealing with students, do you find, Jenny, that mm-hmm. you spoke earlier about some of the things you find in writing, I guess, at the mm-hmm. beginning of the semester, but do you find sometimes students can be excessively wordy, thinking that it makes them sound smarter? For example, I'm going to endeavor to explicate the reason for my opinion yeah. on said topic.
Absolutely, yes. And part of me is, oh, good, they're playing around with the language, But on the other hand, no, it doesn't, it doesn't work. So.
Yeah, that's a writing style that I've adopted from the beginning. I've written two books so far, and each book I kept it to the language, similar to the language that I speak. I like the conversational type style.
Yeah.
Whereas if you read the book, it would be pretty much like you're speaking with me.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, there are many authors, which are obviously they're incredible authors, but they really play with the English language, and everything is poetry, but yet it's not easy to follow. And for mm-hmm. somebody like me, college educated, I read many different books. I still have a hard time getting the message of the book, especially when it comes to nonfiction. I don't know. Is it different between fiction and nonfiction? Do you think that you have a little bit more leeway in a fictional type scenario if you're writing a book or like a novel for enjoyment, whereas nonfiction, you should stick with more basic terminology?
I'm like you. I enjoy the more conversational, more user-friendly approach. And I've seen people do that in nonfiction, especially I think Lynn Truss pioneered that with Eat, Shoots, and Leaves. Do you remember that book? I think it's from 2003, The Punctuation
Yes.
Guide. And I think that's why it was so wildly popular, was because she broke away from that real rigid style of explanation and was more conversational and injected fun into it. And I respond a lot to that.
All right. So I wonder if it's just a shift in the way that our language is evolving.
I don't know. I think we're probably not reading as much. And I think that has a huge impact on our vocabulary and our way of expressing ourselves. I don't know how one would really learn vocabulary if they don't read.
Certainly not from action movies, I'll tell you that much.
Similarly, Jenny, I've read and heard several places that the students these days, that their English is, the level of quality is decreasing, and I've heard it attributed to texting. Do you see any correlation to that? I've always kind of been a little bit suspicious. Are students really typing LOL in their term papers and that sort of thing?
No. I occasionally get a U, just the letter U, but it's not common. What they are doing is not capitalizing their I's.
Wow.
And that's very common, and I was really surprised, and especially in emails. Not capitalizing their I's and not using apostrophes. And that might be because iPhones add them for you.
Yeah.
You know, but that's definitely...
It's the autocorrect.
Autocorrect gets people into trouble.
Yeah, that's true.
For anybody who's wondering what we're talking about, just Google autocorrect.
And Jenny, what are your thoughts on buzzwords? I've seen in different places recommendation to avoid jargon and buzzwords in your writing. For example, one that comes to mind in a business setting, the word synergy seems to be used over and over and over again. But then again, how else do you describe something where the end result is greater than the sum of the parts?
Did you just say the end result?
I did, yes.
You did it on purpose.
Guilty.
I am always looking for a way that's going to stand out from the crowd. Sometimes it's frustrating because you're like, yeah, that's the only word that means that. However, I feel that if people hear it enough, they're just not going to hear it anymore. So I don't think it does anybody, like if you're writing a resume and I see a lot of students bring in their resumes to me and it's the same. I don't know if those are considered buzzwords, but hardworking, goal-oriented, and it's like if everyone is that, then what stands out?
To quote a line from The Incredibles, if everybody is super, nobody is super.
Exactly. If everyone is innovative, nobody is.
It reminds me, I was just reading something on a website earlier this morning, and I should have, but I didn't even make the connection to what we were going to be talking about today. And it was a quote from... I don't want to say who it was and be wrong. I think it might have been George Orwell. And he said something to the effect of, in your writing, try only to write things that have never been printed before. In other words, to be completely unique in all of your, you know, expressions of things, and, you know, avoid these common ways of saying things so that your work will come across as original. I thought that was an interesting thought.
That rings true because I read so many essays, and I wouldn't have understood the importance of that had I not become a teacher. And you assign, you know, the same essay to everybody, and 75% will sound pretty similar. They don't stand out. And you just really appreciate that person's work that is original. It's such a relief to hear it expressed a different way. It doesn't start with "in today's society."
Oh, geez, I love it.
Yeah, this is good. Well, Jenny, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for this article. I think it was short, concise, to the point. And I appreciate the fact that this interview, quote, was more of a conversation where we got to share some ideas and the English language and how to speak better as a Toastmaster as well as write better. So I really appreciate this. Jenny, once again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jenny.
Bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.